If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Point Forward Podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward Podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. A little off-season check-in here with Jim Ozarski, Bucks reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, and Jim is back from Las Vegas. Did you actually watch the Summer League? Is that actually why you went to Las Vegas? Because I'm skeptical.
I saw attempts at professional basketball being played.
Oh, there it is. Little dig. Yeah.
I I think there's a reason why we as the Journal Sentinel don't typically go to Summer League. Like, I think it's usually been in association with the start of a new coaching regime. And so, yeah, I was out there to talk to Adrian Griffin, get a better feel for him and his staff, and did catch some basketball. But that was, you know.
That wasn't as important as when you hit on 17 that one time, right? And got the four?
Look, man, it was 119 degrees out there.
Got to stay in the casino to just stay cool.
I'll be honest, I'm not a gambler, generally speaking, especially if I'm by myself and in Vegas for work. This is the first time I've ever gone to Vegas for, like, work.
Yeah, I believe it.
And it was not fun. You know, it was really hot. I got a shout out our guy, Omari Sankova, at the Detroit Free Press with the Pistons, JR, because, like, that dude, he was there for, like, all 10 or 11 days because, like, all the Pistons players are there.
Yeah, you're right, right.
And I was like, you know, there are certain inherent benefits to covering a championship-caliber team, many of which happen in season. Mm-hmm. There's a player like Giannis or like Chris or Drew, right, like these borderline Hall of Famers. Mm-hmm. Part of it is, like, the whole team isn't in Summer League.
Right, no.
And you're not, like, watching that because, like, that kind of matters for what's happening. Oh, man, I fell for that dude. And there were other guys, too, other people, I should say, that were also there, like, covering bad teams because their prospects are there. And, man, that's not for me.
So we have a lot to discuss, tax aprons and, you know, maybe other aspects of the CBA. I don't even know, some contractual stuff, real exciting, invigorating stuff. But let's start with the on the court, at least the easy stuff. What did you learn about any of the Milwaukee Bucks that you anticipate seeing in the regular season from what you saw in the Summer League? Because you got a chance to see some of these guys play for the first time.
Yeah, and look, I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek. Obviously, you know, our last pod, JR, I said I felt Marjon Beauchamp should look like a grown person on this court. Second-year players, generally, that's what you want to see. Now, John Horst was like, well, you don't want to expect that. You know, he kind of corrected me. But that's from his chair. You know, I think Marjon looked like, I mean, a guy who got a year's worth of work in at the NBA level.
Yeah.
You know, did he knock down threes at a really high clip? No. Could you say, is that concerning? I don't know. I mean, it depends what he was asked to do. There's a little bit of that spring training part of a pitcher, right, where, like, they might get lit up, but literally all they were
working on that day
was, like, yeah, working on curveball, throwing changeups, whatever.
Yeah.
Marjon, I thought, showed a different willingness to get to the line, to attack the basket, to kind of be strong. I think he looked good in some of that stuff. I think defensively, that's a little harder. I mean, they're allowed to make, like, 9 personal fouls. I mean, I don't know about defense in that league. So, but I
know about defense in that league.
Yeah, so I liked what I saw from Marjon. We'll see in camp, you know, if he displaces Pat Connaughton. In terms of the rotation, you know.
Yeah, that feels like the big question. That might even be one of the bigger questions with a roster that's mostly set in stone. Is Marjon going to rise ahead of Pat Connaughton? That might be, like, one of the top three things, right?
Yeah, like, for teams like this, you don't really think about, like, quote-unquote camp battles as we're on the eve of Packers training camp. I would say that's one of them just because we don't know what Adrian wants. We don't know what Joe Prunty wants and Terry Stotts and all those guys on the coaching staff, right? Like, is Pat shooting that, like, is that so much of a bigger factor than Marjan's potential on defense type of thing?
Sure.
But I really liked what Marjan did. Now, in terms of the two rookies, Andre Jackson Jr., Chris Livingston, they both had their moments. Jackson Jr. on defense, couple highlight chase down blocks and some of these things. Chris Livingston had the, you know, the 20-point game, and he shot the ball much better. Andre Jackson Jr.
Played good defense, if we're talking about his shooting.
that was rough for him.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't the only one. There were plenty of guys who, I mean, look at Brandon Miller for the Charlotte Hornets. Mm-hmm. So what he said is, yeah, I need to work on that. Josh Oppenheimer, I think he mentioned Josh by name in terms of just trying to get a better follow-through, stay in the shot. So I think there's some fundamental things the Bucks are going to be working on, and that's just not an overnight thing. He could do that every day, an entire summer. That doesn't mean anything once you get into the NBA game, right? So, I think in terms of that part of his game, you know, he's going to have to put him up if he's on the court with these guys. But defensively, you know, I think he showed some things. And I think offensively, JR, his ball handling, court vision, I could see some instances if he's playing 5-6 minutes a game where he sort of alleviates some ball handling duties, depending mm-hmm. who he's with. But I don't know if I saw enough out of them to be like, okay, Jackson Jr. and Chris Livingston are in the top 8-9 guys. I mean, they might play more because of, again, we don't know about injuries or things of that nature, how Adrian wants to do stuff. But, yeah, those guys I think showed potential, which it sounds like a catch-all, JR, but, I mean, based on some of the stuff I saw and read from other teams, like, some guys just did not have good summer leagues. And you're like, ooh. I don't know if, other than some of the shooting issues, I don't know if there was like a uh-oh with these guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess the uh-oh, for me anyway, is as we talk about all these guys, and we've certainly brought this up before, who is going to shoot the ball for the Milwaukee Bucks? You know, these guys weren't drafted to be shooters. Marjon Beauchamp probably is never going to be an elite shooter. You know, whether he supplants Pat Connaughton is a question, but like, I think we all sort of assume that if they're going to get another point guard, that we talked about that there would be a trade, and Grayson Allen might be one of the pieces of that, and maybe not. But like, outside of him and Chris Middleton, who shoots the ball for the Milwaukee Bucks? Who's going to be hot when they're hitting threes? I mean, they just signed AJ Green to this contract, and like, I don't know if that's going to be that minor of a move when you consider that there aren't a lot of guys who could shoot like AJ Green.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see how and where AJ fits in this. So my understanding, and John had mentioned this in his interview with The Athletic, was sort of like he didn't want to just sort of name Grayson Allen as a starter. So I think Malik Beasley's got a shot in there. I think – I don't know if Beasley's ever hit 40% of his threes. He's been close.
Yeah. He's a shooter. He can shoot.
His shot profile, what they probably figure is, hey, you're going to get way more open looks with Giannis. So whatever numbers of that, you know, might go up. I mean – pretty much any shooter in Milwaukee the last couple of years that's stuck with the team for the whole year has seen that percentage go up. So whether it's Beasley or Allen, one of them's going to start. I'm not going to go out on a huge limb and say one of them's going to make 40% of their threes, right? Grayson, I don't know Malik Beasley's game well enough to know if he could catch a heater. We know Grayson can make 5 or 6 in a game. Right? So if one of them is off the bench with Connaughton, so there's kind of your 40% guys. AJ, I think it's safe to say, is going to be a 40% guy. So there's 4. Chris is a 40% guy, so there's 5.
Okay. Feel a little better about it.
Yeah, Drew, look, I understand Drew, it isn't sexy, but his percentages have gotten better.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, JR, I go back to this, and we're going to really dive into this once we get to camp, but just another reminder of what Adrian Griffin said in his season opening press conference, which was they're not necessarily going to be firing them up like they did in the Budenholzer era.
Sure.
He called them what, team threes or rhythm threes. It was sort of an interesting sort of like line in there. I don't know. I'm really it sounded a little Jason Kiddish.
Mm-hmm.
in the way of now look, Jason, I think Jason back then was a little behind the times, right? With don't ever shoot threes or whatever. Where you looked at Dallas and they put up a ton of threes recently, right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to like alarm anyone and be like, oh, the Bucks aren't gonna shoot. No. I just think it's gonna look different than what Bud wanted to do. And so maybe five guys who shoot 40%, like that's a pretty good, that's a 30-year roster.
Yeah.
You know.
Malik Beasley is a career 42%
okay,
well,
there we go.
Shooter.
So yeah, so
he's had some pretty good seasons. Some of them were his best ones were around the COVID era, but he shot 39.5% last year. So like right on the border.
Yeah.
39% the year before that. So he's right there. He's
so his profile, yeah, so he profiles to a you know, next level 3-point shooter.
Yeah.
You know, if he's getting one or two extra looks a game that just no one's around.
Yeah. Before we move on to sort of what John Horst had to say and again, getting into the contractual stuff, the contract handed out to Chris Livingston, I'm still not sure I understand it. A pretty lucrative 4-year deal for the last guy in the draft. Can you explain that to me, like I'm maybe five, exactly why they would do that and if that hurts them in any way in terms of financial picture or if it's a non-issue? Like what's going on there with Chris Livingston?
So it's first of all, they took advantage of the new CBA, which allows teams to sign second-round draft picks to up to 4 years. That's a good thing for the Bucks, who need low-level contracts to match up with their high-level.
Yes.
So that's a good thing. They have 4 years of control. The other good thing is it doesn't hurt them in the way it would have years ago, in that under the old CBA, they would have had to dip into taxpayer mid-levels or mid-level. They would have had to pull money. So like Yorgos Kalatsakis, for instance, to pay him as the last pick in the draft was far more punitive, Bucks-wise. That meant they only had X amount of dollars to sign Rodney Hood or George Hill or whatever. Like, that money all came from the same place. So now the Bucks could sign Malik Beasley, Jay Crowder, Robin Lopez. That's this bucket. Chris Livingston, Andre Jackson Jr. aren't
separate
another
bucket.
So off the bat, it's already better. Already better. Now, in terms of the reporting, it's the biggest contract ever. I don't know. I've never read. I don't know all the contracts for every last pick of every draft of all time. I don't know that.
Many of them probably didn't even play in the NBA.
So I'm not going to get into that. What is interesting is the 2 years of guaranteed money. That means Chris Livingston's on the team for the next 2 years. Well, he's got a guaranteed deal. Does it mean he could be traded? I don't know. Maybe. The Bucks need developmental guys, but maybe that extra year of guarantee or these other 2 years at whatever the number is makes him more palatable, like in a deal for somebody. That's all possible. I think with these guys, so Andre Jackson Jr. is guaranteed for this year, partial guarantee for next year. Why is that? You know, Livingston's a teenager. He doesn't have knee surgeries in his past, so maybe there's some of that too with those. I mean, also the Bucks paid $2.5 million to go get Andre Jackson Jr.
Yeah,
so you could argue he's a $10 million player for them if you loop in his deal plus the cash going out.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't necessarily do a comp game, you know, contractually with them. But yeah, I think it's really JR the Bucks taking advantage of the new CBA. Clearly, they love his potential. They have a new roster or a coaching staff that I think is going to focus on player development. So I think it's a inherently a good thing, and they took advantage of the rules that are now in place.
Every time – sports frequently gives us changing vocabulary. Like, for example, in baseball, pitchers are throwing sweepers now, which used to be a slider or just a breaking pitch, but now we're throwing a sweeper. So in basketball, the word of the year is going to be apron. This is I won't say a completely new concept because I knew this existed before in at least concept. But now with the new CBA, it's all about the first and second apron of the luxury tax, how punitive the taxes are versus, you know, like there's different thresholds and they're called aprons. What we didn't, I guess, really know before John Horst spoke with you and I suppose others in the summer league was that the Bucks are right now above that second apron, which comes with some penalties. It restricts how they can attract players. There's some, you know, some exceptions that aren't available to them. It just makes things harder, I guess, is the big picture way to say it. I'd be curious to know exactly what you think it means for the Bucks that they are this far. We didn't know that they were this high up. We thought that, I mean, there's a lot of incentives in various players' contracts that have to be accounted for, and they haven't kicked in yet. So maybe it wasn't clear to us how much money the Bucks were spending. And so the amateur capologists among us thought, well, they're at the first apron, but not the second. But John Horst is like, no, we're at the second apron. So what does that mean for the Bucks in the short term? What are they going to be restricted from doing? And does it matter? And kind of, I know it's a big deal too if they do this a second year in a row. So I want that explanation as well. Give me what you can on this.
Yeah. So John, with in the sit down with me, just flat out said we're in the second apron. So that was funny because people in the newsroom like, hey, is that news? I'm like, well, it's news in that he said it.
Yeah.
The way the apron is it counts all bonuses, likely, unlikely, because you can't just, and I think I mentioned this, JR, I can't sign JR for $1 million and then have $10 million in bonuses as camp circumvention. No, it all counts. So maybe by the end of the year, if Chris and Drew and Grayson don't make their bonuses, the Bucks aren't in the apron.
Right.
But as of now, that's how they have to operate.
Worst case scenario, they will be.
Right.
And that's, which is also a best case scenario because it means they did really good.
Right. So, and the Bucks know this. You know, they're fine with it. That's why they did the deals they did. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean? This year, the only real penalties are some trading and salary intake type of thing. They can't take back additional, there's percentages, but they basically can't trade out, a $1 million player and take back a $6 million player. Like some of the percentages they can't do. Mm-hmm. When guys get bought out later in the year, again, there's some, depending on what that guy made, again, $10 million player gets bought out, the Bucks can't just get him. You know, there's certain, you know, again, percentages there. That's what this year means, JR. Yes, you're right. Once, if they do it a second time in a four-year period, then it becomes penal. But, you know, the Bucks have structured a lot of their contracts. There's a lot of expiring deals after this year. Will they be under the apron next year? Probably, to start. So you're right. It is the word of the year. it was created to penalize teams like the Bucks who have ownership that spends. So as of now, it didn't really affect their business in any sort of like totally bad way. Chris Middleton's back. Brooke Lopez is back. They signed Crowder, Beasley, Robin Lopez. They gave AJ Green a deal. So you mentioned the draft picks. They did that. It's really more about going forward and getting into the second apron the clock has started on that 2 years and four thing. That's not concerning because teams are going to go into it. If you're going to try to win a title, you're going to be in it.
Right.
It's just how often. And as of now, that clock has started.
Well, and you mentioned it, but this is how it functions to create, I guess, a little bit of parity. If the Bucks go to the NBA Finals, there's going to, a lot of these bonuses are going to be triggered. And yes, they're probably going to hit the second apron and they'll have to pare back a little bit going through the next season. If they have a terrible year or any team has a terrible year, they're not going to hit these bonuses and they'll stay lower. And then they won't have to face a second straight year because they struggled. They struggled last year, so they can figure it out this next year. It's designed to keep teams from basically building a dynasty, right? Like to have it, you know, just be able to spend when they bring in new money, like maybe Jimmy Haslam as the new head man. You talked about that a little bit, Jimmy Haslam, and how things are different or not different with John Horst in your interview with him. So were there any revelations there?
Not necessarily. I mean, John, obviously, those are his bosses. He's like, hey, we got a great working relationship. But he did say that, hey, this was the first summer of it, and it was a pretty complicated summer, right? Can you imagine trying to tell, okay, so Jimmy Haslam's got to write checks to Brooke Lopez and Chris Middleton and, you know, now he knew what the tax bills were going to be in the process of buying from Mark Lazary. Like, the capologist for the Bucks, hey, these are going to be the taxes. And Jimmy knew that. He signed up for it. You know, but all this other stuff, and trying to try to explain all this stuff in a really short order. So I think even John allowed that, hey, we're going to learn more about each other and what the operating procedures are going to be going forward. But all of everything I had heard was, you know, the actual cash was not going to be a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so like the tax bill, for instance, look, the Bucks only have 14 roster spots right now, JR. Right now, like once they have to start paying stuff out, it's a little bit of a tax savings. I'm sure they'll add the 15 spot. I know last year, actually, JR, the fact that they had 15 was a little bit new. You know, like they only had 14 the year they won the title. Hmm. They started the next season, the title defense year, with only 14. And John liked that flexibility because I think later that's where I think that's where the Ibaka trade came in. They were able to add. You know, they got to 15 eventually. You know, it decreases the tax bill a little bit.
Yeah. Speaking of Serge Ibaka, he had that no trade clause that we now know Jay Crowder sort of has in his contract as well. It doesn't surprise me because I don't think about no trade clauses. But what if anything do you think that means?
Yeah, it's still a function of the veteran minimums and bird rights. So without getting in the weeds, yes. So last year, Wesley Matthews and Serge Ibaka could just not be traded. They could not be thrown any deals. I'm sure I'll have to remind everybody about this come February when they're like, you know, when they probably want to include Jay Crowder and all their trade machine stuff because he's a veteran on a minimum. Yeah. No, he cannot be traded without his permission. And if we know anything about Jay, he's not going to do anything he doesn't want to do.
Right.
And he clearly wants to be in Milwaukee. Obviously, things could change, as we saw in Phoenix. But, yeah, it's just an important, I guess, footnote. I think he's the only one now on the team, JR, that has that. I don't think there's any restrictions going forward on any of these guys. There's no Bradley Beals or any of that stuff. Maybe there's some deadlines on you know, when guys sign some stuff. But yeah, Jay's the one, just because, again, it's a veteran deal, terms of service, bird rights, all that weird stuff. But, yeah, don't put Jay Crowder in the trade machine. For if you're a Bucks fan trying to figure out a way they could get some like $20 million point guard. All right. Save yourself that egg.
Giannis Antetokounmpo mentioned this on the last podcast. We talk about all the constellations, but not the sun, or I should say the planets, I guess, would be the way that metaphor goes. Giannis had a knee procedure. You asked John Horst about that. Sounds like things are going really well. You've got the FIBA tournament coming up, and he's on the preliminary roster for Greece, but it isn't clear that he'll play for Greece. I think, you know, again, like we talked about last podcast, that would be, I'm sure, something he really wants to do and something the Milwaukee Bucks would definitely prefer he not do because he'll be fully healthy for the start of the regular season. Did you learn anything about that picture, that situation? I mean, Bobby Portis is going to play for Team USA too, so it's not like the Bucks don't have some international, you know, international representation here. But what, anything new on that front?
So with Giannis, yeah, my main question was, is he going to be ready for the start of the season? Because, look, Giannis doesn't really play in preseason games. Yeah. And John Horst was like, yep. I mean, there was no doubt whatsoever. And while that seems sort of obvious, I thought it was important to get it on the record. Just because, you know, there have been some injuries that have gone a lot longer than...
Oh, are you talking about Chris Middleton?
I don't know. I mean, so I just wanted that on the record, right? Where you don't want to get to opening night on October 20th or whatever. And, oh, Giannis is out with, you know, whatever.
Knee soreness. General soreness.
You know, that was, I thought, important. You know, Giannis being on the preliminary roster makes all the sense in the world for Greece. He cannot play if he's not on the roster. Does that mean he will be practicing with the team, working out with the team, ready to play in their first, I think their first game is against Team USA in group play? I don't know. Maybe it's one of those where he's on the team and they think, well, if we get out of group play and get into tournament bracket like late August, I don't know. Maybe. You know, he'll be a couple months out of that surgery and it's all part of the ramp up period. Sort of like, again, I'm going to use that baseball analogy of like simulated games or coming out of the bullpen and you only throw X amount of pitches. You know, there's always a minutes restriction with this stuff. So maybe that's all. I don't know. So I guess we'll find out in terms of Giannis, in with what that is. As far as Bobby goes, you know, Bobby, I saw him in Vegas, super excited to be part of USA. He looks, put it this way, it's really hard to notice sometimes basketball players like getting bigger.
Because they're already huge.
And Bobby's 6'11". Bobby looks a little yoked, JR.
Nice.
And this was like in like casual Bobby clothes. So I'm curious to see what those Team USA photos and games look like. Not that he's like huge, right? But he's like, and he kind of smiled at me. He's like, "Yeah, I'm on some different training kind of stuff to get ready for this." Because look, FIBA basketball, Giannis has always said this. Luka says it. Joker says it. It's a much more physical game. There's no 3-second rule in the paint. You, if you're big, like, you got to play big in FIBA basketball. And look, Bobby's a stretch four or stretch five. So, like, you know, he's going to shoot a bunch of threes for them. They got Jaren Jackson Jr. to kind of be their primary rim protector.
Sure.
But it looks like he's physically getting ready for that. I mean, Chris, like, I hate to throw away the Tokyo Olympics in the sense of I don't think Drew and Chris got the benefit from that other Team USA guys get, right? Because of the title, how long it went, all those things. It was probably physically detrimental in a way. I think, look, Giannis, up until last year, JR, I think Giannis had won an MVP the seasons after his World Cup, his Greek play.
Mm-hmm.
Luka has been in shape and looked Joker, like Giannis, and even last year, for all of Giannis's physical issues, like career high scoring year.
Yeah.
You can look at some improvements. So I think there is a, we can maybe think that Bobby is going to have a really good NBA season based off this Team USA stuff. Steve Kerr's the coach. I mean, you're playing with, you know, some of the top younger guys in the league. I don't know. I think if you're a Bucks fan, you should be excited for Bobby. If it's Giannis and he plays late in the World Cup, that means he's healthy. It means he's cleared. It means he's allowed.
Sure, yeah.
I don't see how that's a bad thing either, because he's also not going through the whole grind of it.
Right.
If that makes sense.
And he'll probably be on the sidelines doing fun Giannis things that'll go internationally viral. That seems to be something we can look forward to. Last thing, the NBA, since we last chatted, has officially announced this midseason tournament that they've been flirting with for a while. And I'm like a lot of people, I don't really know what to make of it. I have no context for something that's similar to it, at least in American pro sports, you know, major American pro sports. So I'm curious what your thoughts are on it. I know you got some of John Horst and some of the other guys around the organization and what they think about it. It seems to me that a team like the Bucks would be, you know, not as all in on it because they are capable of winning the much bigger prize. And why would they maybe put their best foot forward on, say, a smaller thing that we don't really have a context for yet? But, you know, I mean, once upon a time, the Super Bowl was just this weird idea that somebody had, in the late 60s. So, like, there's a chance this becomes a thing. I don't know what to make of it in the short term. So what is your take on it? I'm curious.
So Adrian Griffin, when I asked him about it, he was like, yeah, you know, we have some guys who could use some playoff experience, you know, which was like, okay, you know, that November game against
2.0.
Charlotte, you know, like depending. So the league doesn't want to make these the second games of back-to-backs, but they acknowledge they probably can't prevent them from being the first game of a back-to-back. In the Budenholzer era, I want to say the Bucks tended to rest guys on the first ends of back-to-backs, and then they played the second. So maybe, I don't know what Adrian Griffin's philosophy on that would be. Maybe it changes a little bit with that. I don't know. Even John Horst, who applauded the idea on a broad level, but then also acknowledged on the micro that things might have to be looked at.
Sure. Everybody else can have some fun with it.
Yeah, going back to the Pistons, like Monty Williams should be trying to win the thing, mm-hmm. right? And it could be a training camp.
Absolutely.
Let's circle these dates. Let's win a trophy. Like John said, like win a trophy.
I'm picturing Sacramento, Indiana. Like these
Sacramento's probably trying to win a title.
They probably are, but I mean, they haven't
They haven't won anything.
They haven't taken the leap yet. Right. So it's sort of like these mid-level teams that are good but not great yet, or haven't been great yet. Sacramento's very good. You know, I could see them being the main
contenders. Yeah, like it's a trophy. It's I think the league would encourage teams to I mean, you can't have like a in-season parade, right?
You absolutely
can. But I
think
they would encourage their team to raise a banner.
Yeah.
Right? And this is not like a Colts thing of like, let's celebrate our division title or our wild card berth. But like, it's like there's a trophy. Like if the Bucks win it, it's going in the trophy room. I think for a team like the Bucks, if they get to the final in Vegas organically, then they'll try to win.
Sure.
Because at that point, it's just two games in 4 days like anything else. Are they going to go out of their way to try to beat, I think, what's their pool play? It's Charlotte. Miami's in there. Again, depends. Remember those two games in 4 days in Miami when, like, nobody played except for Drew?
Yeah.
And they got pounded, right? So, like, just because it's Miami doesn't mean anything, really. But I think I'm a golf fan. The FedEx Cup never meant anything to me. Like watching golfers win more money never was appealing. Like that didn't like I don't care that like Rory McIlroy is going to win another $10 million. Like the money never meant much to me. I'm not a race fan, so I don't know if like the other cups in the racing world mattered other than, you know what I mean? Like the points chase. I feel like the points mattered to NASCAR fans. you know, and the reason I mention those is because those are Americans. I mean, golf's global, but those are essentially North American based sports that have concurrent cup formats,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like, I feel like the Winston Cup's a thing when I was growing up. I know Winston doesn't exist anymore,
yeah.
But, like I know of it. It's in my head. You know, people mention the soccer stuff, which I think the NBA's doing a decent job of not leaning hard into it because I think there's a natural bristling or pullback from non-soccer people in America be like, what's soccer? I don't want to do this thing, right?
Yeah, so, soccer's an interesting thing in that it is extremely popular in the United States, but also the thing that people revolt against, right? Like, soccer, 1-0 games, you know, like pro sports fans have forever hated on soccer, and now soccer is such a big deal.
Wildly popular. So I feel like the NBA is trying to thread a needle there. By getting those folks who are into cups and concurrent formats to get excited by also not leaning hard into this is what soccer does in Europe. And you don't want to turn off potentially people who might just be curious.
Yeah.
And who might not naturally, unfortunately. So I'm for it. Like, whatever, man. You know, I just mentioned we started this pod by me saying, like, I think Vegas for work sucks. It will be interesting. Like, what if the Bucks have, like, an East Coast schedule and then they organically win, so now there's 4 days in Vegas and then they're supposed to go to the West Coast and potentially are gone for,
in
like,
December,
2 weeks?
Remember. You talked about the heat, but
yeah.
This is December,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, so it's not so much the heat, but it's more of a, like, there's four teams going to Vegas. I guarantee you at least one of them is going to get jammed up royally.
Yeah.
Like they were on a three, because you don't know who's going to win.
No.
So somebody's going to be on like a 4-game and 7-day East Coast road trip, 4-day layover in Vegas, and now they got 8 days on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Like someone's getting railroaded. Will it be the Bucks? I don't know. We'll find out in August when we see some of these schedules. But, we can podcast from there, and I'm telling you how much this is awful. But we won't know until we get there. The league won't know until they get there. And it's going to kind of be a trial and error type of thing. And we'll see. And maybe maybe the Bucks will look at their schedule and see that and be like, ooh, maybe it's in our best interest to not make it to Vegas.
Mm-hmm. So for those who haven't followed this, there's six pools, five teams each. The Bucks are with the New York Knicks, the Heat, the Wizards, the Hornets. So they're going to play all four of those teams. And you can even help me with this because I haven't followed this super closely, but they're going to win. Let's say they go 4-0. Then they advance out of pool play. They're going to then face off with one of the other brackets. And then you said four teams are going to Vegas, but there's six pools. So how do you know how that works?
Like, the reason I said four, because I believe it's just the semifinal and the final are in Vegas.
Sure, right.
So I don't know what the bracketing is.
Okay.
How it happens after that.
Okay. Yes, because if they win that, and let's say they make it to the final. The final won't count for like regular season statistics because it's going to wind up being an extra game on your schedule.
Yeah.
So all these games are going to count as regular season statistics wise. And then you'll have – and they'll count on your record, right? Your overall record?
I believe, yeah.
Okay. And then –
because they're regular season games.
Right. And if you get eliminated, if you don't make it to the next phase
– you will play two –
there'll be two brand new games that just appear to account
for that. Yeah, like two regular season games. Yeah. So how they – roll out the schedule in August, JR, is going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I think essentially every team's going to have 80 games on the original schedule or 70.
Yes, that's correct. 80 plus the – well, no, it would be – well, because you would know these four, but then the other two are going to be the result of either you advance in this tournament or you didn't and you have two games that get created.
Yeah, you don't just get 4 days off.
No.
Put it that way. You don't just suddenly get, oh, you get four – no. You're playing games.
Yeah. It is super interesting. I'm intrigued by it because it's going to be just so different. People are going
to
be losing their minds.
And this adds to the thing where, like, the NBA, it's like they make the easy things hard. Like, these play-in games, JR, like, these are, like, fake games in their record-keeping.
Right.
Like, they don't count for postseason stats. They don't count for regular season stats because they don't want to say it's the postseason. But they're playing the games. They existed. Where are the numbers? I don't know. This is a whole other thing that the NBA like does dumb bleep me. Like the whole salary cap thing is stupid, and this thing is stupid by like those are playoff games. So yeah. Or they're regular season games, and guess what? Then some teams get to play like 84 games. Just count it. You know what I mean? Like so they need to figure something out on the record keeping end because like, you know, Jimmy Butler, to me, played two extra playoff games last year. Those should count toward his like career playoff stats. You know what I mean?
That's
a whole
agree.
Other conversation.
No, I agree with that.
Down the line.
Yeah. So I'm gonna have to pore over this to get a really good sense. I mean, I got a few months. Like November 3rd is when this thing starts, and it goes until December 9th, which is the semifinals will be December 7th at T-Mobile in Las Vegas, and then the 9th, the championship game will be on the 9th. Eight teams advance to the knockout round. So it's the team with the best standing in group play games in each of the six groups and two wild cards.
Yeah,
so that explains how we get to the bracket.
Right.
So that'll be the team from each conference with the best record in group play games that finished second in this group. I imagine there's going to have to be tiebreakers because, you know, we're talking about four games. A lot of ties in there. But we'll see how that goes and we'll see how it plays out. I think, you know, just where it happens in the season, just the beginning, I feel like there might be some buzz around it when we get there, purely because of the novelty to start with, and then also because it's just going to be a different energy around those first few games. You know, the openers are always a big deal, but then there's a really long slog. I mean, November, December NBA basketball can be really...
Which is why they did it this
way.
Of course. I think the league is going to make it... So when the schedule's announced, they'll really highlight these games. They're going to want people like myself... yourself to highlight them in our coverage. And then in arena, JR, let's be real. Someone who's going to buy that, I think they're home for the Knicks and Hornets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when someone buys that ticket, it's, first of all, I hope they don't charge a premium.
No.
They might.
But that would not be a good thing.
So, but whatever. Like no one's going to buy that ticket thinking it's a cup game. I mean, maybe they hope some of them will. But most probably won't. So I think it'll be an in-game. I think the teams are going to have to work a little hard around that player intro. Like, this is the cup game. This game matters. Like, whatever catchphrase they're going to have for this, right? Just to remind people that they're seeing something that maybe means a little more than just December. But at the end of the day, Bucks fans are going to know it matters if Giannis plays.
No, that's true.
I mean, if it's the whatever game, you know, then that's how the fans are going to view it. So
yeah.
It's all about who plays.
Tiebreakers, by the way, point differential and total points are in that conversation, so we could see some high scoring, some crazy offense when it comes down to it in some of those early season games. So, yep, that'll be something to pay attention to. Anything else, Jim? Because I think we've reached the end.
No, JR, I think we're going to be, unless there's some sort of breaking emergency pod, which I think if you're a Bucks fan, I don't know how that would be a positive thing between now and
right.
the start of the season. We might kind of be on a little bit of a hiatus for a little bit as the NBA kind of shuts down and winds down. So, we'll be back, at some point down the line.
Yeah, for sure. They do still need a point guard, so there's still that. That wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing, although it doesn't sound like that's going to be resolved anytime soon. So that'll do it. This is, again, the Point Forward podcast. We're going to take our, like you said, a little bit of an off-season break here. We've, I guess, been kind of on a break, but this is like the real off-season now. So Jim Ozarski is going to go somewhere exotic, somewhere that's not Vegas, and we will be back as the news allows. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.